I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And that version of the Talk is Jericho theme song was recorded by Kid Cadet. She approached me on Twitter and asked if she could do a version of the song. I said, do it. I liked it. She's a great singer. So a little change it up a bit, man. And sometimes you're going to hear my theme song, and sometimes you're going to hear her theme song. But both times when you hear either one, you're going to know that quality is coming up. Pure quality. And that's what you're going to get today on Friday, because I got the new WWE Universal Champion and my best friend Kevin Owens returns to Talk is Jericho today. Talk about a huge, huge guest, a huge coup to get Kevin Owens on the show. He is the longest reigning Universal Champion in WWE history and my best friend. So we're going to talk all about his crazy 15 months. What a 15-month span it's been for him over the last year and 3 months. We're here what his life has been like since he signed to NXT and he got bumped up to the main roster. He's got Dusty Rhodes stories, Triple H stories, and he and Sami Zayn go way back. Wait till you hear what he has to say about Sammy, and we'll talk about the first match that he and I worked together in San Diego. Lots of great stuff coming with the new Universal Champion. Kevin Owens is here, my best friend. It's going to be a laugh riot, I'll tell you.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so sitting here with Kevin Owens.
Your best friend.
Anything exciting happened over the last week or so?
I got a new dog.
Yeah,
a puppy, yeah. French Bulldog. Oh, and I won the Universal title.
The title, too. So, yeah. So tell me more about the dog.
So, just pretty cute.
I'm just kidding. New Universal Champion, Kevin Owens, which is pretty cool to be able to say that to my best friend.
Yeah.
Last time we spoke was at the Performance Center, and you hadn't even come
out. No, I was right before the pay-per-view at Cena.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You had just about to make your debut.
Yeah, like a couple of days before, yeah.
Was maybe a year ago?
It was May. So the pay-per-view was like May 31st, so it had to be like May 28 or something. So 15 months, basically.
In the past 15 months, look at what's happened.
Pretty crazy.
For you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how it's a cliche question, but how do you feel being the champion?
Well, so it's essentially the WWE Championship, right? Mm-hmm. It's called something else, but over the years, like when you won the Undisputed title, and to me, it all still goes back to the title that I saw Shawn Michaels win at WrestleMania 12, which is the first title match that I really like. So it wasn't the first title switch that I remember watching as a fan, right? I saw Bret Hart beat Diesel at Survivor Series.
Are you saying you saw it like you were there?
No. I started watching wrestling because I saw my dad rented a tape of WrestleMania 11. So I started watching then, like a couple months later. It was a couple months after WrestleMania had taken place, obviously, because it was out on VHS, whatever.
Coliseum video.
Yeah, so I saw Shawn Michaels and Diesel for WrestleMania 11. That's the match that made me want to be a wrestler.
Okay.
But then my dad started like buying the pay-per-views for me and everything, so I started watching like religiously in the summer of 95, I guess. So I saw Bret Hart, the Survivor Series, beat Diesel for the title. I remember Bret Hart going through a table, and it blew my mind.
Like one of the first times we'd ever seen that.
I had never seen it.
Yeah.
I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then he small packaged him and still beat him. Like, this is unbelievable. But the first title switch that I really went crazy for was Shawn beating Bret for the title at WrestleMania 12.
That's the Iron Man match, right?
Yeah. And then WrestleMania 14, I saw Austin beat Shawn for the title. Like, those are the things that, to me, it's still that title. Like, or even you winning the Undisputed title, beating, because to me, it wasn't lost, the fact that you beat Rock and Austin in the same night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember telling my dad, we were in the living room, like, he beat Austin and Rock on the same night. And my dad's like, yeah, so? Like, no, but it's Austin and Rock. Is like, but my dad got it, you know? But I'm like, I was like, oh my God, this is huge, you know? So through all the different names and the different variations of the title, it's still the WWE champ. Like, that's when I was a kid, when I was 11, and I saw Shawn Michaels, or I was 12 at the time. No, I was still 11. When I saw Shawn Michaels win that title, WrestleMania 12, I was like, oh, man, I want to be the WWE champion. Mm-hmm. And now here we are, you know, it's pretty incredible.
You know, and also, too, like, when you think about, and I think it wasn't a knock against you, but if any naysayers are going to say something, like, Kevin Owens does not have the prototypical look.
Yeah, and it didn't stop there. Like, so I had people say that all the time. You're the shape you're in, or the gear. Get a singlet. And I wrestled in a singlet for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
It just wasn't me.
Right.
Or my attitude, too. Like, people would say I had a bad attitude. The thing is, the people that would say I had a bad attitude was probably, it was a matter of not seeing eye to eye. Mm-hmm. So now, like, I know, I'll say his name, I really don't care. Like, I know Jim Cornette says that the reason I'm successful now is because I changed my attitude and I must be listening to what people tell me now. Mm-hmm. And I used to not listen to him. But that's really, the thing is, I used to not listen to him or whatever, or question his methods because I didn't agree with him mm-hmm. and I didn't share his vision. I really didn't change who I am. If, like, anybody who, even you, like, you'll, if when we're working on something and I don't see it, I'll say, like, I don't know about that. Yeah, you know, I don't just do anything people ask me blindly, which I guess what Jim would have liked me to do back then.
Well, I think there's a fine line, too, when you're first starting, because I got that, too, when I first came here. None of the agents wanted to work with me. They said I was a pain in the ass to work with because I had ideas and thoughts about what I knew. The only guy that liked working with me was Pat.
Yeah.
He enjoyed the back and forth, you know, throwing ideas back and forth. But a lot of guys just cut me off right away, and you probably had that, too. I know Punk had it as well.
For what it's worth, I really haven't. Mm-hmm. Honestly, from the moment I got here, people, like producers, even the writers, everybody, I really feel like I had a really good relationship with everyone. And I can remember one specific time where I really didn't like the idea they had for me that night. And I spoke up about it. I ultimately did it the way they wanted it, and it was fine. It ended up being fine. You know what I mean? Like, I was told it's really not a big deal. I'm like, really? I think it is big. He's like, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And they were right. It wasn't a big deal. But, like, I still voiced my concerns and my opinion. You know what I mean? But I really haven't had any encounters where I was like, where my bad attitude would take over.
Well, maybe in the past with Cornette is what I was saying. Maybe that's why you thought that, because you had an opinion of what you wanted to do. And sometimes guys like the vets, quote unquote, or the bookers don't like that. But that's how you stand ahead. That's how you're a unique performer because of that.
I remember... actually, it was Kevin Kelly. I'll say I might put some blame on Kevin Kelly here, but I remember
this is Ring of Honor days, right?
Yes, Kevin Kelly came into Ring of Honor to do commentary and, you know, kind of work behind the scenes as well. And I remember him telling me that he used to work with Rock and Austin. Mm-hmm. And he would see the same thing, like, because he would see me, like, if we had a pre-tape and I didn't like the way it was, we'd make it, I'd ask to redo it. And it would annoy some people, like the production guys or whatever, or even, whoever wrote the pre-tape, whatever. And Kevin said, look, it's like it might be viewed as you being kind of hard to work with to some people, but I'm not obviously not putting you in their league, but I'm saying The Rock and Austin used to do the exact same thing. If they don't like it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So to me, that was a huge compliment in a way, because I was like, okay, so, you know, cause listening blindly to what people are telling you, if it's not you, just, it won't work.
Nobody knows your character like you.
Because somebody can have a very precise vision of what they want. But if you can't alter it just a little bit in the smallest way so that it's yours as well, then it's really hard to deliver it the way, in a way that will make people want to watch. Mm-hmm. So him telling me that probably kind of prompted me to being really, not set in my ways, but to really question when, you know, Jim would come up with something that I didn't like. Mm-hmm. But I know that was the first example of like where I felt like, so you know what? Being me is important. You know, when Kevin Kelly kind of affirmed, like, well, the top guys in the business would do that. You know what I mean? So why not me?
Right, right, right.
Because that's where I want to be.
So, and then now that you're the champion, I mean, obviously, like, you have the end of the night. We'll talk about the whole night, but people chanting, you deserve it, and all that sort of stuff. But there's also a lot of naysayers as well, as there always is when a new guy gets crowned. Every single time someone wins the title, the first time, there's always a wave of people going, that's the wrong guy.
Sure.
Did you hear some of that this week as well?
Oh, yeah, of course. So, like, people would immediately... I knew it would happen too. Immediately, people went to Jim Cornette saying, oh, you were wrong. Because like Jim had been on record saying I was the kind of guy who never wrestled in front of more than 200 people, stuff like that. Jim, I don't think from what I know, I don't think Jim said anything about me winning the title in the negative way. He just said, look, I don't care about it. It doesn't matter. I won't watch it. Whatever. But he did it because he changed his attitude, which is not true. But whatever. The one person that I kept hearing about was Vince Russo.
Right.
Because Vince Russo has been very vocal about how he doesn't think that I'm a star, whatever.
Because of your size? Or
Just the way I look or the way I carry myself or whatever it is. And I'm not the only one. Like, he said stuff about Finn Balor and Sami Zayn as well. The thing is, people always want me to respond to him, and I don't, because the thing is, I truly believe, I just know it. I know Vince Russo doesn't believe what he's saying. Mm-hmm. He knows I'm good. He knows Sammy's good. He knows Finn's good. He knows that me being champion is a good move. Like, he's just saying that to piss people off, because that's what gets him, not ratings, but that's what gets him attention, yeah. You know? And it's true, because when he says it, I know he did, because I get a million tweets about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really believe that he's not, I don't think he believes a word he says. I think he's just doing it to rile people up. Either that, or he's really upset that I blocked him on Twitter years ago. Like, he made one comment about the Young Bucks, I think, and I was like, ah, come on, and I blocked him. And then I remember somebody showing me, like, last year when he started talking crap about me, hey, Vince Russo said you blocked him on Twitter. I'm like, oh, so now he knows. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
and that's the ultimate slap in the face.
In a lot of ways, it is, I guess. Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the interesting thing, because you talk about what is a prototypical look. Because to me, one of the reasons why you stand out, A, because you're a great worker, great personality, but you are different from a lot of guys, the same way that Mick Foley was when he first came in.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a guy like Bam Bam Bigelow or guys like that. And that you're not a cookie-cutter guy. So to me, I don't really understand why that's not to your benefit, looking the way that you do.
Yeah, so I always felt like it was. Mm-hmm. I always felt like it set me apart. You know, in people's minds, it could be negatively or positively. But look, I've said this before. To me, since I came to WWE, people kind of ask me, like, what's the craziest part? Like, what's the one thing that stands out, like, since you came to WWE? And I've had, like, great moments, you know, winning the title being obviously at the top of the list. But before that, honestly, the one thing that sticks out in my mind the most is when I would work with Cena. And I'm talking not pay-per-views, not TV, because they're obviously too, but even at a live event in, man, I'm trying to find a town that we did that was like, in like a tiny town in Illinois. I forget, Danville, Illinois, I believe. Yeah. I'm in the middle of the ring. His music hits, the noise. No matter how big the building is, no matter how big the crowd is, no matter if they're tired because it's been a long night, the noise, because it's boos and it's cheers and it just hits the middle of the ring. It's the craziest sound.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, that's what I want one day. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be universally loved or hated.
Right.
I want to have people going at it with each other.
Yeah.
Because that's what John has. Now that's what Roman has, because I had the exact same experience. I was in the ring. I wrestled Roman a couple months ago in Atlantic City, I think. Or no. Wildwood in New Jersey. And his first match back from suspension. So people were like, even more. His music hit. Same thing. Like, just yeah. You get pelted by noise. And it's the coolest thing, I find. So, you know, my look, it really had people on polar opposite sides. Like, oh, he looks terrible. Or, oh, no, it sets him apart. But that's... To me, I like it. Mm-hmm. I like that some people hate it. I like that some people love it, because I want that confrontation.
You want people's
opinion. Yeah. I don't want anybody going, eh, I don't
yes.
care.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
It's the same with a rock and roll band or something. Yeah. You want some people to totally hate it, because that way at least they have an opinion either way.
Because if also the people who really hate it bring up the people who love it.
Yeah.
What I mean? That's kind of funny, but
so let's talk about your day last week. How did it kind of go? Because it's funny. I was going to tell you this story. You showed up and you're wearing a suit.
Yeah.
And a couple weeks before that, I had gone to Vince about a suggestion for you and I.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got this idea for me and Owens. He's like, well, you guys might be doing something quicker than you think. I'll talk to you about it tomorrow. And I was like, wow, he's talking to me about it tomorrow. For some reason, the way he said it, it was like, maybe he's going to make me the champion again. So I showed up at work with a suit on, just thinking, well, today's the day. And then, of course, it was not that I was going to be the champion. It was that Finn was now going to be working with Seth, and you and I were going to team up against Enzo and Cass. So I wore a suit for that.
Yeah, so I bought a suit when I first got called up because, you know, I was told to buy a suit. So I showed up in the suit. And I wore the suit for a couple months, the one suit, the only suit I had. The thing about suits is I don't know how people wear them. I sweat Yeah, and I'm like, there's no tomorrow. So and then they made the rule that, oh, you can actually wear a tap out now. This is the greatest news ever. So tap out stuff all the time. I have tap out shorts and shirt right now. But then last Monday, I was like, you know what? I feel like maybe wearing a suit would be the right move. Mm-hmm. So I did. But I didn't even do it right. Like, it was the same suit I had had for, you know, a year. And I didn't even have a dress shirt on because I don't have – I realized when I was, oh, I don't have a dress shirt. I threw it away. So I wore, like, a V-neck T-shirt. It looked fine, you know. It looked a lot better than what I, you know, my –
just you wearing a suit jacket with dress pants. Everyone, like, holy smokes.
Everyone was like, hey, what's going on? And, like, even Rome was like, oh, you know the finish? I'm like, no, I don't. I just figured maybe today was a good day. Leave me alone. So I wore a suit all day. And – it was terrible, but ultimately, you know, things. I was told things were going my way, and I'd be buying a lot more suits. So,
when did you find out? This is not something you knew. Like,
no, I don't know, 5 p.m. Maybe.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I think people sometimes don't realize that. Like, you don't really know the plan all the way through.
You're some people think that I didn't know right up until the moment it happened. Did you hear about this?
No.
Yes, for some reason, I was so convincing in my performance that people thought I didn't know. And when Triple H rolled me in the ring, he said, just go with it. That was the conversation going, and that's how I found out.
Like, they're working everybody.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's always the rumor of it. But, I mean, another thing, too, about it is, like, it was a big surprise, and also with Triple H coming back.
Yeah.
And it's funny, too, because there are people like, oh, sure, now it's all about Triple H again. You're a heel. That's how heels win titles.
Here's the thing about that. I couldn't have been better. But not just for storylines purposes, now where do we go from here, why did Triple H do it, what's going to happen with Seth and Triple H, this and that. It obviously opens a lot of doors for interesting stuff TV-wise. But for me personally, you know, people assume that, oh, you know, when you win the world title, you probably want it to be like this incredible battle where you claw and you blood, sweat, and tears, and you just have this heroic moment. Besides the fact that I'm a heel. Triple H got me here. He made the call to hire me. He made the call to take a chance on me because there's a good, like, he hired somebody who's not cookie cutter WWE superstar. And there would have been a chance where somebody would have been like, you hired him? Are you kidding? Mm-hmm. And when I was hired, I was told by Canyon Seaman, who called me to announce, like, okay, we're going to sign you. But I was specifically told to tell you, don't get your hopes up for Raw and SmackDown. You know, because you're not the typical WWE superstar. You're going to have a chance in NXT just like everyone else. So I said, oh, I'm up for the challenge. I said, I figured that's what you'd say. That's how my career started here. Mm-hmm. And then Triple H obviously always believed in me. That's why he signed me, and he saw something in me. And Terry Taylor even straight up told me once at the Performance Center, he's like, Triple H sees something in you. I don't see it.
Classic Terry.
But it's my job to bring it out. And then, you know, later on, like, I have a great relationship with Terry.
He's
but
great.
Part of why I love it is because he's so honest.
Yes, very other to people, a detriment.
Other people really dislike that about Terry. Yeah. I love it. So, anyway. And then, you know, last Monday night, Triple H literally handed me the title. But that was a moment. Like, man, I don't care how – that was incredible to me. And I got to say thank you in the ring. Like, mm-hmm. He gave me the title. I said thank you. But it wasn't thank you for giving me the title. It was thank you for everything.
Yeah. Like, thanks for believing in me.
Yeah, because without him, no matter how – like, you know, I had Steve Austin saying good things about me. I even had The Rock saying good things about me before I got signed with WWE. But without Triple H taking that chance – who knows where I'd be now?
To bridge the gap between you and Vince, probably, to get, hey, Vince, this guy's got something, you know?
Yeah.
And it's you know, I've been a champion 6 times and always as a heel. I've never won as a babyface. And every single one of them going through my head, there was always some kind of shitty finish. I remember the last time I won it, Shawn Michaels came from under the ring and super kicked Undertaker. It was almost the same
finish. I
remember
that. Elimination Chamber.
Yeah. Scared to cover, like, he's going to attack me next. Yeah. And then you're kind of crying as you have it. I mean, that's the way a heel should win a title.
Here's the thing. No matter how I would have won it, somebody would have had to complain about something.
Sure.
And I understand. It's the culture. It's also, you know, there's so many wrestling podcasts or, you know, wrestling reviews. And somebody, you got to have something to talk about. So you got to be unhappy about something or really happy about something.
Yeah.
I even had close friends of mine, not like wrestlers, like close friends. Close. Well, they were friends, you know, they're fans that I've known from the independent days.
Okay.
And I followed them on Twitter. And I remember a couple hours later, I just kind of scrolled through my feed and I saw one specific comment saying, oh, Kevin Owens is WWE Universal Champion. That's incredible. couple more tweets later, same guy saying, I can't believe it's just all about Triple H now. And I was like, man, you really missed the point there, buddy. Yeah, you know, and he's my friend.
Right.
But there's no point in like trying to explain. But like, anyway, like I said, there's always something to complain about. Mm-hmm. I could have won it clean as a whistle. And somebody, the same person who complained about the way it went down, he's would have said, well, he's a heel. How come he just, you know? Like, yeah.
Did you talk to Vince at all afterwards?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, when I came back from Gorilla, there was quite a few people there. But I eventually made my way to Vince. And I basically told him he wouldn't regret this and I'd make him proud. And he said, I'm sure you will. Mm-hmm. And that's as good as I, you know, that's all I need.
That's it. Because you're still kind of cultivating that relationship with him right now.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like we have a good one, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't talked to him as much. I guess I've talked to him more than most guys do, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that's only because I make a point of going in there when I have a question instead of letting my producer do it. Because people like you or John or Randy have all told me, like, what are you sending somebody else for, you know? And
build a relationship. That's, Steve Austin told me that when I first came
here. Yeah, Steve, same thing.
You got to build your relationship. I know he's intimidating, mm-hmm. which he is, but you got to break down that barrier and get in there with mm-hmm. him. And that's a great point.
And he really... The thing about it is he's intimidating because he's Vince. Mm-hmm. But once you get in there, he's not intimidating.
Yeah.
Like, he's not trying to intimidate anybody.
Yeah.
What's intimidating about him is everything he's done and everything, you know, who he is as a person and what he represents.
The concept of Vince is intimidating.
Exactly. Yeah. But once you get in there, you're just talking to a guy, you know, who's cracking jokes about him and Linda being married for 50 years. And, oh, God, how did she put up with me for that long, you know? And
that's right. That's
I remember I told this recently on the Sam Roberts radio show thing, but first time I had an actual conversation with Vince – was right before I came out on Raw to confront Cena. And so I went into Vince's office to talk to him, and he didn't want the other wrestlers to know what I was doing there that night. As far as they were concerned, I was just, I'm an NXT guy coming for TV, whatever. I'm like, okay, but you want me in my gear, right? He's like, yep. I'm like, okay, but when I put my gear on and I walk in the locker room and stuff and in the hallway, the other wrestlers will see me and ask me why I have my gear on, so what should I tell them? He goes, to the other wrestlers? I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, why don't you just tell them to go F themselves? And like, my first day, like, I'll just walk around telling him, hey, Kevin, what are you doing? I'll go, you know what I mean? Like,
it was just, fuck yourself,
it really kicked things off. And it really, like, I don't know. It really popped me. And I don't know. It was good.
So let's talk about your year with some of the highlights that you've had, because you came in right on top with John Cena. Yeah. What a way to debut.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is really, like, working with John was a goal I had set for myself as a future, mm-hmm. like, one day I got to get there. And then I came in that way.
Yeah,
so it was
pretty
wild. And it was also really rewarding because my son, this has been well documented, my son's such a big John Cena fan. Yeah. And I always, you know, he would ask me, when are you going to wrestle John Cena? I'm like, I don't know, maybe one day. And then we got to do it. His reaction was all over, you know, Twitter and Facebook, mm-hmm. and they went viral because my wife recorded because she knew what I was doing, but he didn't know. He just knew I was going to be on Raw. But also the coolest part was I went to the Performance Center a few weeks before the match, and John was there, and I knew he was going to be there. John told me, bring Owen. So Owen, like, walked in, had no idea. His first time at the Performance Center, he's like, oh, and then he saw John. I'm like, who's that? And he goes, that's John Cena. You know what I mean? And John gave him a letter that he – handwrote, like, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say that. I don't know if John would be a very big fan of me telling this, but he handwrote a letter to my son, like two full pages.
Wow.
Explaining to him, like, this, because I was telling John once when we were preparing a promo, I was saying, like, you know, I could, if you want to make it a little personal, I could talk about this one time WWE had a show at the Bell Center and I took my son. And, you know, I was second row, and everybody there knew that, oh, that's Kevin Steen. He's a professional wrestler. But look at him in the second row at the WWE show with his son, you know. I bet he wishes he was in the ring, you know. But I put that aside because I just wanted my son to be able to John Cena's hand. And when your match ended, I rushed the guardrail with my son just like any other fan would. And instead of coming around the ring and shaking hands, you just left. You went straight to the back, and my son was crushed. And John was like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm like, oh, no, it's fine. He was fine a minute later.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, but I feel bad. I'm like, no, please don't. That's not what I'm just saying. Like, do you want to talk about this? Like, so maybe we keep this for later, but I feel terrible. Please tell Owen I'm sorry. I'm like, no, it's all good. And then the letter was John basically apologizing for that. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. It was crazy. But, that was that. Honestly, as a father, my crowning moment now is mm-hmm. that moment when I got to see my son interact with John for the first time. and just give. I don't know. I just see how happy Owen was. Mm-hmm. It's not even like it's John Cena. John Cena's the one who's to thank for that, you know. But I feel like a great dad.
You handed him the letter. What did Owen say when you won the title?
He was speechless, mm-hmm. and that's what he said. My wife recorded his reaction again because everybody was asking, "What's Owen doing? What's Owen saying on Instagram and stuff like that?" Because a lot of wrestling fans follow my wife. Mm-hmm. And she asked him, like, what do you think? He's like, oh, Mike. And he just goes, I'm speechless right now. You know, it was so cute and funny. And, you know, when I came home with the title, he was really, really happy. He took a couple pictures with him and stuff. And, yeah.
It's funny, yeah. It's cool you get to actually, I think a lot of fans might not even know this, when you're the champion, you get to keep the title.
Yeah, yeah.
It's your responsibility.
They actually didn't want me to keep the title for that week because they wanted to put the plates on.
Oh, right.
But I was like, I got to take it. And like, I can't go home without the title. Uh-huh. And then I remembered, oh, wait, the next day, the day after Raw, I was going to Toronto for like a vendor's fair for Toys R Us stores or something. Mm-hmm. I was representing WWE. They were like, well, I can't go without the title. And they were like, oh, yeah, okay. It was just an excuse to take it home. I'm sure I could have showed up without the title. Nobody would have said nothing.
How come you weren't on Good Morning America? Every time they send somebody to Good Morning America.
I think because my suits weren't fitted yet. So
the other one was too wrinkled up from the other day. So, I mean, it's really it's been a lot of fun for me to work with you. And kind of your whole group of guys, Sammy and Neville and, you know, Ambrose and all those guys. I mean, how do you feel like with this locker room now? They're basically your best friends.
It's really crazy.
You know?
A couple of years ago, so none of us ever, like, we knew we all had the same goal, right? It would be in a Ring of Honor locker room or, you know, a PWG locker room or whatever. And it'd be me, Sammy, Neville, Daniel Bryan, you know, or Seth Rollins, or even... he might not be happy to say that, but Jimmy Jacobs, you know, who now works here behind the scenes.
Great writer that works with us. He's amazing.
He's never said publicly that he works here. But
oh, really?
Doesn't matter.
Well, I think I've said it before. Okay. So I blew it.
Now we're all together here. And, you know, obviously Brian isn't wrestling anymore, and that's a shame, but he's still part of, you know what I mean? Yeah. He's still there. Now we're on SmackDown with split rosters, but still, like, it's crazy. Like, I was just sitting and catering with Sammy and Jimmy and Seth, and you came to sit with us, and we're just – it's what we used to do at Ring of Honor, except there was no catering, so we'd buy our own food and just kind of sit at the same table.
Yeah.
It's – I don't know. It's pretty wild to see that. Like, not only did we make it, but we're all pretty successful here.
Yeah.
That's
quickly,
the coolest
too.
Part. Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, Finn, Cass, all those guys, they weren't – you know, I didn't meet Finn until I came to WWE. Or to NXT, we both got there. I didn't meet Cass until, even though he did a couple of independent, you know, a couple of years on the independents, I didn't meet Cass until then too. But they're very much part of the crew as well, in terms of like guys who just grinded to get here and always dreamed to be here, and now we all are, and it's a pretty incredible feeling.
How did you feel when Finn got hurt?
It was really. It was heart-wrenching because I saw him get hurt. I knew he was hurt.
Did you really?
Yeah. But I didn't know it was serious because he kept going like nothing happened. And then he won the title, and I got emotional because we're very close friends. And also I knew, you know, he had a blast in NXT. And he brought NXT to the level it's at now. But he wanted to be here, obviously. So I don't know how many times we talked about how conflicting it was that he enjoys NXT so much. And, you know, in a lot of ways... NXT is Triple H's baby. Mm-hmm. So we all, like, that was a thing that actually, like, when I got called up, I was so thrilled, but I was like, man, I kind of wish I could have stayed in NXT to help
you. Were there a short period of time, weren't
I was
you?
There 6 months.
Right.
I was saying, I kind of wish I could have stayed in NXT a little while longer to help it make it even bigger, if only to thank Hunter for what he's done for me. Mm-hmm. And Finn felt the same way, and everybody did, you know, Sammy, Neville, all those guys. But Finn, at the same time, wanted to be here just to be with us and, you know, to keep...
Sure.
You know, to fulfill
his
career.
It's the big leagues, man.
Yeah. So he would have this conflict, you know, and then finally, you know, he put in his time. He was there for 2 years, and he brought it as high as he possibly could have. Mm-hmm. Finally, he gets called up, and he gets, like, you know, the first day, he gets what he... Like, it's almost, they're almost making up for lost time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you were in NXT for 2 years, but here you're literally the top face right now.
Yeah.
Welcome. And then I'm like, that's incredible. You know, he's getting what he's worked so hard for. Even by simply, you know, staying in NXT for so long, it counted. Like, that's what I really appreciated is, yeah, he stayed in NXT longer than he probably should have. But once he got up here, that time counted. It wasn't like, oh, this is a brand new WWE superstar that you guys have never seen before. No, no. That's the guy who took NXT to this
good
level.
Point. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I thought cool that was, yeah, I thought that was great that they took account of the time he spent there and everything he did for that brand. And then for that to happen, and for him to have to relinquish the title in front of his parents and stuff, you know, in a way, thank God his parents were here because they probably helped him through the whole process. They stayed like a week after he had surgery.
His mom was taking care of him. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really heart-wrenching to see. And but, you know, I feel like at the same time, it's kind of the same thing I told Rollins once he hurt his knee. You never lost a title.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to come back stronger than ever. People are going to be so excited for you to be here. There is a silver lining, as hard as it is to see for now. And at the same time, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. Like when I heard officially that he was relinquishing the title, obviously that opens a door. And I was like, well, I'm going to kick that door. You know what I mean? I'm going to kick that door in. I don't know. So it was conflicting emotions. But I think what made me feel better about the whole thing, because when I won the title, he's one of the first people I thought of. Like I thought of my wife, my kids, my parents, my grandfathers, who, you know, died before they could see me wrestle in WWE. But I thought of Fergal too, who was at home. Honestly, I had to hold back from like throwing up the too sweet for him just as a little wink. But as soon as, you know, I came back, I talked to my wife, I talked to my parents, and then I FaceTimed him. And to see his smile and how happy he was, and even his parents were there too, and they were all happy. Like, it just made me feel so much better. That,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we know eventually he'll come back. And
well, and that's part of the business. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I think I won the Undisputed Championship, because Triple H got hurt. He tore his quad. I'm pretty sure he would have been in that tournament. I probably wouldn't even been in it.
If let's you go think ask Vince right now.
Yeah, let's go find out. He probably
let's put him on the spot.
He probably doesn't even remember.
He's burst into his office. What the hell is this?
Who told you that you were going to win? H or
Vince?
Vince?
Yeah.
Because here's what he told me. I was sitting in catering. Because once again, everyone's like, I never had my wife.
I know what
you
he
know
told
the story.
You. I know what he told you.
Didn't have my wife there or my dad because I didn't know I was going to win.
Like, didn't he say something along the lines of, you know things aren't going good when you're putting a title on Jericho.
Hey, Taker. You know things are going on the tubes when you put the title on Jericho. And then walked away. And that's, I guess I'm winning.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think I read your books too many times.
I know. But
Most of the stories you tell me.
It's funny, too, though, because I tell these stories. I'm like, I remember Bad News Allen used to tell stories over and over again. And now I feel like Bad News because you guys have all read my books.
Yeah, you didn't tell them yet. We
I
just know already.
I forget that you're like, how old are you, 32, 31?
Yeah, 32.
You're 32. I mean, 13 years younger than I am, but I don't feel that way. It's like, hey, guys, I got this story. So, yeah, we heard it, you know, old guy. But let's talk more of one of my favorite dynamics, both in the ring and out of the ring, is your chemistry that you have with Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
Just one of the quirkiest, like, getting to know him has been such a blast. He's completely insane when you first meet him, drives you nuts, and then you realize that's all part of his genius.
Well, I don't want
to call it that.
I don't know that I'd say it's genius. It definitely is a part of who he is, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the way he is. For years now, I've seen him go into new places, new companies, whatever, piss everyone off by just being him.
Mm-hmm.
And then win everyone over a couple months later by literally not changing a thing.
By just being him.
Yeah,
yeah, that's exactly
that's
right.
Just how he is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you say piss off, because he's very he thinks and overthinks and overthinks and very meticulous with the way he talks and everything.
There's that, you know, like he'll overthink everything that happens in the ring. Well, I don't even think it's overthinking because... You know, I've wrestled a guy for the better part of 13, 14 years now, and I can't say that we've never had a bad match because it's definitely happened once or twice, but they were hilarious, you know? They were almost bad on purpose. But every match we've had that had people going crazy, it wasn't all because of his overthinking, but some of the things that made people crazy was because of a thing that he rethought, even though we thought we had it. You know what I mean? And I know a lot of guys probably aren't used to that or probably get annoyed by that because technically he's the new kid here or he's the new guy. Like I remember around WrestleMania, people were getting annoyed with him because he was the new guy, but he would question everything. But you know what? He's not a new guy. Mm-hmm. He's been doing this for 15 years.
That's right.
And he's better than you. So like, doesn't matter how long you've been here. Like I'm not talking about anybody specific, but he really is one of the absolute best I've ever been in the ring with.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we have the chemistry, but I'm saying, like, he knows how a crowd's going to feel before the crowd's even in the arena.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah. So I've seen guys get annoyed with him because he's, well, what if we do it like this? And what if we do? He's only trying to make it better. And yeah, he hasn't been in WWE for 10 years, but listen, he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just because he wasn't here as long as you doesn't mean that you know better.
Right.
But I feel like whatever, that's a whole other topic. But that's part of how he wins people over eventually, because even Ring of Honor, that would happen where he would question things and people that felt like they were higher on the totem pole than him would be like, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
But then later on they'd see, you know what? He's right.
And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. When you have the confidence in yourself, it might rub people the wrong way.
Sure.
But you're not doing it for the wrong reasons.
No. Yeah. I've never seen him upset someone, on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll always remember it was, in PWG once, it was me and Brian Kendrick against him and Paul London, because him and Paul London were a team at the time. But of course, the duo is Paul London and Brian Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
And the other duo was me and him. But because just the way the booking aligned, they were the tag team champions, him and Paul. So me and Kendrick, I suggested to PWG, it'd be kind of cool if it was me and Kendrick against Paul and mm-hmm. Sammy. Let's do it. We did it. And when it was time to call the match, Brian Kendrick eventually got so fed up that he said, here's what I'm going to do. And this is, I know Brian and Paul have talked about this before, but Brian said, here's what I'm going to do. You're going to tell me what you want me to do. I'm an excellent performer. I'm going to do it exactly how you want me to do it. But mentally, I'm taking myself out of this match because you're not listening and you don't want to hear our ideas. So what do you want to do? And Sam's like, well, why don't we do this? And then he just, and that was it. Yeah. He didn't agree with what Brian wanted to do at the time. And I, for what it's worth, I didn't agree with it either.
Yeah.
But I was less vocal about it because in my head, I was like, we could still make what they want, like what he wants to do. We could still make it work. But Sammy felt a different way. And he just argued his point because he felt like, no, you know, these people expect this and this and that. And, Brian ended up getting fed up and just did it Sammy's way, and the match turned out fine. But it was just a funny,
yeah.
Like I remember later on hearing Brian talk about it and saying, "He's like, yeah, they asked for the match. They're the ones who want to do this match. Well, listen to us, man. You're the one. I didn't ask to wrestle you. You asked to wrestle me." Yeah.
But I remember one time we were working with Cesaro. I think that you were involved as well. It might have been, I don't know, some tag team. We had like 18 tag teams of you and me versus Cesaro and Sammy.
Yeah.
And one time Cesaro was trying to get something in. Sammy kept talking. Cesaro goes, "Can I say something, Sammy?" And Sammy just went, "No." And kept talking.
He didn't. But he didn't mean it that way.
No, he was just like, I got something going on here.
Yeah, he was in the middle of rolling. And Claudio kept trying to chime in. He's like, "Can I just say something?" No. And then,
I do remember. No, you
can't. But they have a hilarious relationship too. Sammy's got a hilarious relationship with everybody.
Mm.
Not just me. It's with everyone. Everybody's relationship with Sammy is pretty entertaining for different reasons.
Right.
You know?
Because you guys started together, right, in Montreal?
No. Okay. I started in, I started training in 99 or 98, actually, in a barn.
Mm-hmm.
Not for Jacques Rougeau. It was Sergio Audouin was his name. He was a local wrestler, good guy, but his school shut down. So then I started training with Rougeau in 99. I think Sammy started training in 2000.
Okay.
In a backyard, in someone's backyard,
like on a lawn or something.
Yeah, it wasn't a real the wrestler, and you guys can't see the quotation marks on them. The wrestler that trained Sammy should not have been training anyone, let alone on grass and not an actual ring.
Yeah.
He's pretty much self-trained, but we end up meeting for the first time in like 2003. And then I started wrestling all over because the way it worked was Rougeau wouldn't let you wrestle for anybody else but him, but he only ran like 3 shows a year.
That old thing.
Eventually, I got sick of it. I started wrestling all over the place, and that's when I started, being on the same shows as Sammy, and mm-hmm. we just kind of gravitated towards each other because at that point there were other guys who I think wanted to come to WWE, but I think a lot of the guys never thought it was really possible.
Mm.
But we never saw it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so up until 2003, no other, like no Quebec wrestlers would go wrestle in the US.
Mm.
We were like closed off in this little island, even though we weren't an island, but like it was just our own little wrestling prison where it was just Quebec guys do Quebec shows and that's it. Sometimes they'll venture out in Ontario, but me and Sammy were really the first two who kind of start going all over the place in the US. And from that point on, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what about PWG and what about Ring of Honor? And then what about Japan? And
You always kind of WWE? Ended up yeah. together, yeah. right. I really love the last match that you had on the pay-per-view. It was a great match, but towards the end, and I can't remember the exact specifics, but you were, there was the emotion, like, why don't you just stay down, or why are you making me do this?
Yeah,
or,
I said, and that's, honestly, that was on the spot. Like, mm-hmm. It wasn't something we prepared, it's just, it was kind of a culmination of all these years, you know? Like, I said, why don't you just stay down? Why are you making me do this? And then he slapped me in the face really hard. Almost knocked me out to the point where I was, when I came back at him, I was swinging for the fences and then went into the finish. But yeah, that match, it's not far behind the Universal title win, is something like how proud I am of, like, at one point, the reaction of the crowd is so genuine. They're not even cheering the good guy or the bad guy. They're just cheering for the wrestling, and that's so cool.
Respecting the match.
Yeah, that's a really cool feeling.
But I loved, and you said it was a spur of the moment, but I feel that that's something you might not have done a year ago. Like, there was this, I don't know if there's a WWE style, there is, but that just seemed to me like just really understanding what wrestling is about. Is that, like, you know, I'm sorry, I love you before Sean super kicks Flair. Like,
yeah, well,
you know
to me, so the thing that me and Sammy, I think I would have done it a year ago, and just here's why. Because to me, and it's been like this for years, me and Sammy understood something that, like, it's kind of obvious when you say it out loud, but not everybody realizes it. Wrestling is about moments. It's not necessarily about a match. Mm-hmm. It's a moment in the match that's going to make that match great. You can have 15 minutes of the most athletic, incredible stuff ever. If there isn't a moment to remember, that match is just going to be another match. So we worked for moments for many years, like even dating back to Ring of Honor. The whole feud we had, we worked it in terms of moments and what we're going to do and how we want to make people feel. So that match at Battleground was constructed in the same way. We wanted moments out of it. We didn't want just a match. You know, we had specific, like, we had three moments in that match that here, this is what they're going to do, the fans, and they were doing it. Here, this is what they're going to do, they were doing it. And then at the end, this is what we need to do, and they were doing it. We just designed those things. To me, like, I don't know, since I was a kid, like, I don't remember matches, even if I, like, as far back as I can remember, Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart, the Iron Man match was a great match. I don't remember specifically the match. I remember the last super kick.
Yeah.
I remember Brett walking down the aisle when it was called a tie, and the ref saying, "No, you got to come back." Gorilla Monsoon saying the match continues, and Brett in the ramp, like, "What?"
Yeah, classic, you know what I mean? Bret Hart, yeah. Like, what? Yeah.
Come back in, the super kick, 1, 2, 3, Shawn on his knees with the title, and Shawn allegedly telling Hurl Ebner to tell Brett to get out of the ring. I remember those moments. I can't tell. I know at one point Shawn hit a Hurricane Rana in the match because at that point I'd never seen one before. Mm-hmm. So I remember that. But I can't tell you how they started the match. I can't tell. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing for so many matches where what matches you love. Oh, I love this match. But really, all I remember from that match is one specific moment that made me love it.
You remember the moment and the vibe of what the match makes you feel.
Yeah.
Sitting here with my best friend Kevin Owens, the new WWE Universal Champion. And like I asked, have you ever met Shawn Michaels, Kev?
Yeah. I'm actually, when he comes around, I'll be honest, I'm kind of like
still a mark.
Like giggling schoolgirl. Like, yeah, he's the one guy, like, you know, Steve Austin or The Rock are going to come by and I'll talk to them and it's great, you know? But I'm still, I can contain myself. Mm-hmm. When Shawn's here, he made me want to do this. So when I get to sit next to him and watch a show, like in Australia last year, he was on the whole tour with us.
Oh, really?
And every night I'd sit next to him and we'd talk about what's happening, match, wrestling. We'd talk about family, our kids, stuff like that. Blows my mind. Like, I walk away, I'm like, all right, Shawn. I'm keeping like, all right, Shawn, good talking to you. And I walk away, I'm like, like, I'm just a little kid.
What do you think about the rumor or maybe the fact at this point of him training guys?
So when I heard that, I don't know the specifics, but I know he goes to the performance center and I know he's working with some people. Like, I know he was at the last NXT television tapings. Mm-hmm. I was legitimately upset that I don't live in Florida anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Because if I did, and I even talked to my wife about it because I don't know the specifics yet, but next time I have a few days off in a row, I said, I think I'm going to go to Florida if that's okay. She's like, yeah, okay. He's like, you know, Shawn Michaels is there. She's like, yeah, it's fine, you know? Like, I just want to go sit in on his class one day or something. But I don't even know if he has a class. I don't know what the specifics are. I just know that he wants to go help down there, and he's been doing it. He's been going to the PC here and there. He was at the, you know, the television, TV tapings. I'd love to be around just to learn more.
Yeah.
That's all, yeah.
Just to sit in with him, yeah.
Yeah, like, I've seen him even... If he's got a segment on Raw, I'll go sit. But I mean, I do this all the time. Like, I go sit in Gorilla as much as I can for Raw. You know, if I don't have a busy night on TV, I'll stay in Gorilla and just watch. And I just kind of learn from everything I see, I find. You know, I'll observe Billy Kidman timing the show, and I'll observe the producers talking into the headsets, and I'll observe Vince and Hunter and everybody and Road Dogg. And I just really like just being around it all, you know? Mm-hmm. But I remember Sean had a promo segment with, I think, The Authority and Seth. And the writer kept trying to talk to him. And Sean was kind of just like going back and listening to the writer. And then he turned to me and talk. And then the writer was, Sean's like, yeah. And then eventually Sean's like, listen, I'm sorry. I'm not going to remember any of this. He's like, I know where I'm supposed to end up. I'll end up there. And the writer's like, okay, thank you. And the writer turned around and Sean's like, you made me give me a face. Like, I don't know. I don't know why they make me do this. I don't remember anything.
That's Sean for
you. But then he went out.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't anything the writer wrote. It wasn't on this, but he nailed it.
But it was good.
Yeah, it was incredible. That's exactly. And then he came back, and it was, you know, Vince, good. He's like, oh, yeah, you know. And then he went to write, thanks, and the writer's like, oh, you're welcome. I really didn't do anything. But,
throw this in the trash. How about like for me and. This might have been more for when I say my generation of guys, the Attitude guys, when Pat was really involved, taught me 90% of what I know about putting together a match. I think Sean will tell you the same. I think Brett will tell you the same. I know Rocky will tell you the same. Do you have any type of relationship with Pat with the Montreal thing? Or
yeah. He, you know, we talk every time he's here. It's great to talk to him and stuff. I don't get to work with him as much.
He doesn't really work as much. He just kind of hangs around.
Yeah, but you know, if it happened for the four way we had at Extreme Rules, it was me, Sammy, Cesaro, and The Miz. Pat just happened to be nearby and something caught his ear and he started throwing ideas out and this and that. And he's throwing ideas out. Some of them would work. Some of them we didn't think would work. We used one of his ideas that were great, you know, but he still has such passion for it. It's just, I feel like instead of really sitting down and hammering out all the details, I feel like he just kind of wants to browse and try to help everybody with if he thinks of something. But after the matches, that's where I like to go at him, to him the most, because he'll watch the match. And I know he's got thoughts after. You know what I mean? There's times I came back and he's shaking his head like, what are you doing? This and that. And what are you thinking and hearing this? And there are times where I come back and he's like, give me a big handshake and a big hug. It's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And those feel great, you know? But it feels just as great to get the feedback that if he didn't agree with something.
Well, Pat's also very honest.
Use that. Yeah.
Very honest.
You know, being honest is in an industry where too often people are disingenuous, being honest is a real quality, you know?
I used to hate that in WCW I'd come out of a match, and I can tell you specifically some of the guys. I mean, Flair was always one of them. He'd be like, hey, did you watch that? Oh, yeah. What'd you think? Oh, it was great. Everything was great? Yeah. Wouldn't change a thing. I'm like, there's no way we watched it. Like, everything is great. Every single thing is great. Yeah. And I know it wasn't great, you know, but I always liked it when people, and Pat was always like that. You know, he's the guy that told me.
But one thing though, sorry to cut you off.
Right.
One thing that I do, I feel like sometimes people that are not necessarily always honest are going to be that way because they know whether or not the person they're speaking to are A, going to use it, or B, can take it. Mm. So I feel like I've seen people, producers, tell somebody they had a good match, and I know they don't think it was a good match. But I also know that they don't think there's any point in telling the person what was wrong with it, because A, it's going to fall on deaf ears, or B, it's not the time right now. Like, they don't need, like, that's something Sammy said about Dusty once after Dusty passed away that really resonated with me, because I used to wonder, sometimes I'd see somebody cut a promo at promo class, and I'd see Dusty say, good job. And I'd be like, what? Are you kidding? That was good? Sometimes the people that you're critiquing or whatever, they don't need to hear a negative. Like, sometimes they need to hear the good job more than they need to hear, well, I would have done this differently.
Because that could crush them.
Yeah. Not even necessarily crush them, but sometimes maybe somebody would cut a promo, and I've seen this happen. I'd see Dusty say, good job, and I'd be like, man, that was terrible. What are you talking about? The next week, that same person would come back and cut a great promo. And Dusty would have this smile like, there it is, kid. And I'd be like, oh, wow, that was way better than last week. Because sometimes the confidence in yourself means so much more than, all right, I should have said this here, or, oh, no, I should have done this move there, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe sometimes the confidence of, oh, yeah, I'm starting to get this.
That's what you need.
Means more than, oh, well, that snapmare wasn't as crisp as it could have been.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, that fourth punch that you threw was the shits. Did Dusty influence you at all in that short time you were in NXT?
Yeah, I've said this before. Like, I knew Dusty for 10 months. He was only in my life 10 months. But he influenced me more than people that were in my life for 15 years.
Because you got to NXT, which you were there. I think you were only there for 6 months.
Yeah, but so I was really in NXT. I was in the building, like the Performance Center, from August 25th to my last day there was May 20th when I went to get my stuff in the locker. Like, but I started, like, I made my debut in NXT in December. So it was 6 months on TV, but I guess I was in the building for like 10 months.
So Dusty influenced you more than you knew for years.
Like, there's people that helped me in my career and I've known for 12 years. And those people influenced me less than Dusty did in 10 months just because Dusty, to me, was larger than life. But he was to everyone, right? But, you know, people ask me, how did he influence you? It's really hard to put into words. I think that one thing that I got from Dusty is that, in a way, I already knew I was different. And I wasn't the cookie cutter. And if anybody wasn't the cookie cutter, it was Dusty, right?
Good call.
But then I
yeah.
saw even his attitude wasn't cookie cutter. He was Dusty. And, you know, of course, Dusty Rhodes is going to be Dusty Rhodes and nobody's going to say nothing to him. But in the end, like, I was like, man, he doesn't give a But, yeah, he's allowed to not give a you know?
Yeah.
I'm, for some reason, really iffy on swearing. I don't want to.
We'll just cut it.
Yeah. He doesn't give a shit, you know? But it's of course, he's earned that right. But at the same time, I could see, like, that's how you have to be. I don't know. It's hard to put into words, but it's really, that resonated with me is Dusty was Dusty all the time. You know what I mean? So I feel like, in a way, that's why I stopped wearing the suit. And I went to the tap-out clothes because that's the tap-out clothes are me a lot more than the suit. But now, obviously, you know, with the title comes a certain allure that,
prestige,
you know, that the company wants. And that's fine. I'll wear the suits, you know, and I'm, you know, I'll get more comfortable with them eventually, I'm sure. But ultimately, the one thing Dusty, like the one last thing impression that he left on me is that you can be yourself here and you'll be fine.
But that's what the business is all about. It's about being your own self, being a pirate, a vagabond, a gypsy, you know. We don't have to play by society's rules because we don't live in normal society.
Yeah, but when you first get here, you don't necessarily know that, you know. Like, I remember when I first, like, got to the Performance Center, they had this thing where they were going to take pictures and videos of people, all the everybody in their gear for, like, you know, for the entrance video and stuff
that. Yeah.
But me, I hadn't debuted yet. I didn't even have a name. I didn't know anything. So I had this nice singlet made because I wore WWE. I can't wrestle in shorts and a t-shirt, even though that's what got me.
Yeah, right.
So I showed up. I put my singlet on, and Enzo, of all people, looked at me. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm a wrestler. He goes, no. Who are your shorts and your shirt and stuff? Like, I don't have it. I have my shorts in my bag, but I don't have a shirt. It's like, oh, you got to be you.
Yeah.
But that's what he got from Dusty.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
so it's past
right.
So I turned my Guns N' Roses shirt inside out. I cut the sleeves off and I used Finn's paint. That's another thing. Finn was like, should I paint for this or should I? I don't know if they want me in paint or not. I'm like, Hanzo's like, yeah, put the paint on.
Yeah, man.
So I used Finn's paint to write fight on my shirt. And that's how the look came about. Like, I was in the shorts and the shirt and I was like, man, in my head, I did the little video, you know, like, it was just me, like, you know, it's just you screaming and stuff.
They
use for the entrance video and the highlight reels and the packages and stuff. And I was like, man, I wonder if they're going to make me come back in tomorrow to do it over in the singlet. Yeah. Like, what are you doing in shorts and a t-shirt? And nobody said nothing about it.
You never heard that once ever. But
no, the opposite was I got art sent to me from Hunter saying, hey, here's what we're thinking for your gear. You know, once they pick Kevin Owens' name, like, what about this KO, like this and that. And on the drawing, it was me in shorts and a t-shirt, and I was like, "This is fantastic!
I can do this.
I did it." You know what I mean?
Let's as we wind down here, I just want to talk a little bit about our kind of history, because I came back last year to work live events, yeah. And I think the first one or second one was in San Diego, and yeah. Cena had just broken his nose,
yeah,
and you were working with him,
yeah.
And they put you and me together.
Yeah. We opened the show.
We opened the show.
Remember that?
Yes.
That was a blast.
And here's the thing. Like, I'm not saying this disrespectfully. I had never seen you work. Yeah. I'd never seen it.
Actually, you did see me work once.
At the live event?
Nope. When? You saw me on a PWG DVD several years ago.
Really?
You know how I know that?
How?
Kurt Hawkins, who I'm good friends with, told me once. I always remember this. It's like, yeah, I was showing the latest PWG DVD in the locker room. And we were showing your match. And it was a six-man tag. I remember the specific match he told me. He's like, Jericho saw it. I'm like, oh, yeah? What'd he say? He's like, he said, oh, is that Steen guy? I don't like his gear. And I was in the shorts and the t-shirt.
Wow. In all fairness, I was never a fan of the shorts and t-shirt.
Fair enough. But I'm
now,
just saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Now that you bring it up.
Gee, thanks, Chris. Because well, we talked about this before. Like we had DM'd each other a little bit, which I thought, once again, I'll say it again. I always thought that like you took the initiative to ask, is there anything I need to know when I come in?
How could I not? Like once I saw, because I remember tweeting about your book, because I was reading your second book again, mm-hmm. and I knew the third one was coming, so I just asked, is the third book coming soon? You answered, and then you followed me. I'm like, oh, man, I can't not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But once again, you said before when Dusty would say, like, maybe this person isn't ready or they're not going to use the advice. A lot of guys don't ask for advice, mm-hmm. which still blows my mind because, you know, you should.
You know, yeah. And I've never been the, you know, I don't want to be the veteran who complains about the generation mm-hmm. after whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Because I was that generation that people would complain about sometimes. One thing I always did was ask for advice and watch the shows. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people here that come in as extras. And this is something that I'm sure other wrestlers are going to hear that are going to do extra work in the future for WWE. If you're an extra, you should watch the show. I can't tell you how many times it's beyond asking advice. I've seen extras not even watching the show. Mm-hmm. I want to be on Raw one day.
Yeah.
Well, you're at Raw now and you're eating grapes and catering.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
How do I know? Yeah, I came to catering. Well, guess what? I was on the show. So yeah. Give me a break. Put your grapes down and go watch, you know?
But there's people, I'm not going to say any names, trust me, but there's people that left last week during the main event.
Oh, yeah.
A four-way match for the Universal Championship for our, you know, basically the first champion. Mm-hmm. Not extras.
Yeah,
people on the show.
People
main roster. People
left before the match even started.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, and I will swear, what the fuck are you doing? This is your job.
Yeah.
This is what we do. And to me, even to this day, after doing this for some 25 odd years, if I'm not in the main event, it pisses me off.
Uh-huh.
I want to be in the main event every night.
Yeah.
And if I'm not,
I remember how offended you were that we were opening in San Diego.
I was pissed off we're opening because that's because John wasn't there. And I was like, this match is not an opening match. But if I'm not in the main event, I want to watch it to see maybe I can learn something that I'll be in there next time.
So to that point, though, I'll say this. I've left during shows before the main event, too. But
live events or TVs?
Live events.
Okay, sure. That's
and maybe
story.
TVs sometimes, too, if we had a long drive to SmackDown.
Sure.
The one time I wouldn't leave is if I know something big's happening.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when Ambrose took the title at Money in the Bank, we had a long drive to the next town or whatever, but I didn't know Ambrose was doing the cash-in, but I had a feeling something was going to happen.
Yes.
I was in Gorilla for it because those are moments that, you know, if something big happens for someone that you respect, especially like me and Dean had been working for so long, for 8 months at that point, but even then, like I thought maybe Seth's going to take the title back or something, or even then they're
something
this main
is
event
going to happen. Yeah. Especially if that match we had too, that ladder match was great. The Money in the Bank match, that was a great match.
Yeah, so I felt like, you know, it's just a matter of, I don't know, there are some moments you should be in the building
mm-hmm.
for. You know, if it's a house show and I've seen, you know, I've seen the loop, I've seen that match, whatever.
That's not what
there's
was,
always exceptions, but I know what you mean. Like, if your aspiration is to be there one day, the logic is you watch how to get there.
Yeah.
But John... You know, John and Randy feel the same way. Like, I know because I've talked to them about it.
Cena watches every match.
Exactly.
At every show.
Cena, I know. I've sat next to him and watched every single match with him.
Yeah.
Same match. Sometimes the card is the same three nights in a row.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
He doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. He sits there and watches everything.
He puts his gear on before the show, sits down and watches the whole thing.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of times he'll comment on, he'll, Well, not a lot of people at the monitor today. But hey.
But going back to San Diego, mentioning John, I remember that my point was when I said I hadn't really seen much of your stuff, because I remember we put together this match, because I think I might have got there at like 6:45 or something, because I didn't think it was going to
be put it together pretty quickly.
Quick,
you were pretty shocked. Yeah, pretty we're quick. First. What is that?
What do you mean we're first? Typical Jericho.
And I was already in my gear when you got there.
I was like, what are you talking about? But then I remember you were talking about the package, not the package power bomb, the power bomb thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know how to do this. And we actually had to look it up online to watch it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my favorite move. I don't even know what you call it.
Yeah, you love taking it.
Dude, I love it. But right off the bat, and it's always cool when you find this, because it doesn't happen with everybody, when you find chemistry right away in the ring as foes.
Sure.
But then now on the show, we've created this alliance to where it's like a lot of people say, and I agree, it's one of the best things on the show is the Jericho and Owens.
You know what it is?
Banter.
It's just, we're lucky that they're letting us have fun. Like,
yes.
Like our relationship in real life is really what they see on TV.
Yeah.
So that's cool that I don't know if I think it kind of spurred on from that one backstage segment we did with Del Rio. Where we had a 6-man tag or something.
Yeah.
That's where it happened. Remember?
Right.
That was just
you actually
like you watch
created...
it. And I came, for some reason, I felt like I'd watch what?
Just
it. And that's how it all started. And that was complete. You know, it was just.
That was one. And another early one I remember is when you ran down the ring after match and jumped in my arms.
Yeah, that was in England.
That was made even before that.
Yeah.
And you're like,
that was before that.
You're the goat, I'm the donkey. Yeah, you're whatever we said.
Yeah.
I don't, maybe just some random tag match. But I remember after that, either Vince was laughing or something, because I went to my
Vince was popping big for that one.
Yeah,
I remember that.
I won. Chris helped me, but I won.
Yeah.
You did it on your own.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him, like, this is, we got something here.
The best part is, the only reason I said that line. I won. Chris helped me, but I won. Was because Vince specifically said, Jericho's going to do most of the work, but I want you to act like you did it all by yourself. So I literally just said exactly what Vince wanted, and he loved it. So really, he was just enjoying his own work. You know what I mean? But he really enjoyed it.
But I mean, it's one of the funniest things. Like, I show up every week and like, okay, what are we doing? And it's a cool moment when you get that, because it's not something that happens all the time.
Yeah.
And we've found this really cool dynamic, which I'm sure at some point will lead to more matches against each other.
Yeah,
again.
I would assume so.
You know, which is, I mean, just stupid. Like when you stole my scarf on SmackDown and the Jolly Rancher, and you know, I mean, that's good stuff.
Hey, we got tweeted by Jolly Rancher afterwards.
What?
Sometimes you don't see the tweets because there's too many of them.
Yeah.
Jolly Rancher tweeted at us
like
2 days later. They were basically asking you if you wanted more Jolly Ranchers, and they copied me on it too, or something like that. Yeah.
We needed an endorsement deal.
Yeah.
And then there's something that people don't really know is that you and I even pitched an idea to do a movie together with WWE Network or WWE Films. And Vince texted me, he's like, send me some improv.
Yeah.
And I was like, new stuff? And he goes, yeah. So we went and
just sat in a room
and just
pretended to be cops.
And I don't know what I probably not gonna happen. And you got everyone's like, give Owens and Jericho a movie or a show. Well, we try.
Yeah, we're trying.
We're trying.
We're trying at a standstill.
Yeah, we're trying to stand still, man. But yeah, it's exciting.
We're negotiating whether or not it's gonna happen.
But it's exciting, man. So, anyways, we're here at work. We got to get ready to go soon. But what's your, your favorite match that you've had since you've been here in the WWE?
Well, so I get that question a lot, but there's so many I can't. Like, my first one in NXT against CJ Parker is really special because it was my first match in WWE, and I literally waited 20 years for that. So it's hard to not put that one up there. My first match with Cena, it was a pay-per-view. I beat him. People were shocked. And then there's, obviously the Universal title match because it's so fresh and so.
Sure.
But, you know, Battleground with Sammy, or even like this four-way we had in San Diego with Dolph, Del Rio, and Roman sticks out in my mind because at one point me and Roman are like the last two left in the match and there's the crowds going crazy. There's just it's too hard to pick one because it comes back down to moments.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that moment in that match with Roman and those guys sticks out, or the moment, you know, like the moment that makes me appreciate the match with CJ is before the match, I was by the monitor and when the show started, the, then now forever graphic flashed and I was getting goosebumps. Like, oh my God, this is actually happening. And then the first face that you see right after that was mine. I was like, oh, like that moment, you know, and then I went to have the match and it's moments. But I guess the top moment has, it's the Universal title, you know.
Did you put the title on?
No, I don't do that. I've never once. The only time I won a title and I put it around my waist was when I was Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. I won it. The next day, I did my entrance with the title around my waist, and I saw a picture. I was like, ugh. I look stupid. I'm a shoulder guy.
Yeah,
just the way I am.
Right. Yeah. But you must have had that moment though. As I said, as we wrap up, I remember the first time I ever won the title, and it was taken away like 50 minutes later when I beat Triple H in a fast count.
Yeah.
And I had one commercial break, and I went and just looked in the mirror and I put it on. I just remember that one moment. I just went kind of by myself into a corner, just like. I did it, man. I did it. Even though I got to give it back right away, but I'll never forget that moment.
Yeah, of course.
Of like Chris Jericho, WWE champion. Yeah. Who would have ever thought this?
Yeah.
Did you have that moment?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my wife, I remember I talked to her. She's like, you should go celebrate with your friends. Like, I will celebrate by going back to my hotel and watching The Office on my iPad while eating, you know, junk food. That's what I do. And I was sitting there eating, you know, by the time we got out, everything was closed. Picked up like Whataburger or some crap and went where, you know, me and an individual are sitting in my hotel room, both kind of staring at the title, eating our burgers and going, both shaking our heads like, I can't believe it. They were both like, I know. And that's how we capped off the night. It just doesn't get any better than that.
That's it, man.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, champ.
Thanks.
You know, it's going to be a great ride over the next few months. So you deserve it.
Thanks.
All right, thanks to the WWE Universal Champion and my best friend, Kevin Owens. I want to thank him for sitting down with me. But, hey, isn't that what best friends are for? He's about ready to go out there tonight and tear it up in London. I'm at the O2 Arena as we are in the middle of a 3 continents in 5 days tour. Flew in from Atlanta this morning into England, do the show tonight, leave tomorrow morning for Hong Kong, then Manila and the Philippines, do the show, then leave that next morning at 5 a.m. to fly to China to do that show, and then end up in Baltimore. So anybody that thinks that what we do is easy, just keep that in mind. 3 continents in 5 days, that's a lot of traveling, but we are excited about it, and I'm also excited to tell you about the shows on the Jericho Network that are killing it. Conan, Keep It 100 is on fire. Huge, huge rating success. You need to give it a listen if you haven't. Conan, Disco Inferno, KG, the last couple episodes, they had the NWO with them, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac. It's a great podcast, very, very funny. Go check it out and hit that subscribe button on iTunes. And while you're subscribing to Keep It 100, the hidden gem on the Jericho Network is the Team Tiger Awesome Show. So funny. These guys are just, you know how funny and ridiculous and wacky they are when they're on Talk is Jericho, when we're talking about summer blockbusters at the Star Wars Symposium for Who's Hot and Who's Not, another big hit. But the episode they just released of their own show on Sunday is one of their funniest so far. They each designed their own action star from the top down. They choose facial scars, arrest records, and in true Team Tiger Awesome fashion, the discussion also veers off into luxury yachts, Pauly Shore short shorts, and who is Truly's beef buddy. I'll tell you who his action hero is. It's Global Jones, and it's hilarious. Go check it out. These guys will have you in stitches. The Jericho Network is keeping you entertained with Keeping It 100 with Conan and the Team Tiger Awesome Show. Hit subscribe on iTunes and leave everyone a 5-star rating and review. All right, let me say one last thank you to all you guys for supporting the great Talk is Jericho sponsors and to the sponsors themselves, including ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Get 20% off the DDP Yoga program. It will change your life. Plus, you'll get 3 months of full access to the DDP Yoga Now app. Go to DraftKings. Use my promo code Y2J to play for free with your first deposit. Go to BetDSI, BetDSI.com. Use my promo code Jericho25 to get $25 for free when you sign up. TrueCar and the TrueCar app, and of course the OG sponsor, Amazon. All my Amazon links are at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page, then hit that Talk is Jericho button. If you're in the USA, if you're in the UK, if you're in the Canada, remember, anytime you use those Amazon links on Talk is Jericho, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs. You can buy anything you think of on Amazon. Be an Amazon warrior, a Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior. If you buy something, take a picture of it, post it on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet you and I will follow you. How does that sound? All right. Thank you so much for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP headlines coming up next. And coming up next Wednesday, it's a future Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, one of the biggest legends in rock history. He's got a new album coming out. I'm talking about Meatloaf. All right. Meatloaf is here. He's got great stories about Bat Outta Hell, one of the biggest selling records of all time. He's got great stories about his new record, Braver Than We Are. Meatloaf is here. Plus, he got Lost coming into the studio. That's another funny story. This Wednesday, rock and roll legend Meatloaf is going to be in the house on Talk is Jericho. But in the meantime, and in between time, have a great weekend. Be safe. So stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big yeah, boy, to you and yours. See you next week.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.